I mean, in 2003, it didn't make the top 10.
Because it didn't have a movie in 2003?
Oh, what year was it that it came out? Oh, you're right. Okay, 2001.
You're right. In the year it didn't have a movie, it didn't make the top 10. My bad.
Okay, whatever.
Welcome to the Rampant Discourse Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Essen, and I'm joined by my regular discoursers, Andrew Riley and Travis Hudson, and special guest discourser, Gurky. We're continuing our series on the movies of the 2000s, where we'll be discussing our favorite movie, the movie we think is the most influential, along with some others that are worthy of discourse. This year is 2004, so Gurky, why don't you kick us off with the highest grossing movies of 2004?
You'd think by now I'd know I should go to the top grossing area.
Yeah.
Okay, so the highest grossing movie of 2004 was Shrek 2, followed by Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. I totally skipped the amount of money it made.
Yeah.
So Shrek 2
it's
made...
It's not notable, really.
$919 million.
A lot.
That's a lot.
It's a step down from last year.
And Harry Potter got $796 million. So that's actually a really big gap between the two.
I'm going to go here and just tout my Shrek pick from before. Like, people say, like, oh, Shrek, whatever. It didn't make that much. It made a fair amount of money.
It's popular as different influential, though. But it, yes.
I'm just saying.
But that sounds like a lot for an animated movie.
The Shrek franchise made a ton of money. And I think people forget how popular
it
was.
But it wasn't in 2003, it didn't make the top 10.
Because it didn't have a movie in 2003?
Oh, what year was it that it came out? Oh, you're right. Okay, 2001.
You're right. In the year it didn't have the movie, it didn't make the top 10. My bad.
Okay, whatever. Where were we?
We're on Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2 was next. And then The Incredibles, followed by The Passion of the Christ. And then The Day After Tomorrow, Meet the Fockers, Troy.
My favorite movie.
Sharksville, and Ocean's 12.
It shocked me that... Both Spider-Man movies have been relatively low, considering how much they always get touted as shattering, like, opening weekend records. And then so they must...
People go to see them once and say,
yeah,
sucked,
they don't
and then go back.
Wow. Well, so, they don't Spider-Man tail, actually had $783 million here. It was only $13 million less than Harry Potter. They were very close together in this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's much shame in coming in behind Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, when you attach the number to it, it sounds more impressive than, like, oh, you were third or fourth or whatever.
Yeah, it's third, barely.
Raw numbers are important rather than just a ranking, because it gives you magnitude.
Where 13 million is barely. You know, it's like pennies,
just
right?
Skipping by on my $13 million a year.
Yeah.
All right, and then we go to the awards, which have nothing in common with what
nothing?
Was making money this year. Yes, so...
Per usual.
Sideways, which made wine popular. We had Ray, Finding Neverland, The Aviator, which is a Michael Mann produced movie. I did not know that. And the movie that swept the Oscars pretty much was Million Dollar Baby. Million Dollar Baby, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor. It cleaned up at the Oscars that year.
All right, so we're going to take a stab at guessing each other's game movies. We're going to make a game out of it. We're going to take a stab at guessing each other's favorite movies and most influential movies. We're going to get one guess a piece per person. And if you get a guess right, then you get a point. If you don't, you don't get a point. And whoever has the most points gets some pride bucks.
And if Andrew really hates your guess, he takes away a point.
Well, I didn't actually take a point away.
Oh, just, you didn't? You should. Go ahead and do that now.
I threatened it. It would actually help because Paul is in the lead because I didn't take the point away.
Yes.
If I had taken the point away, he would no longer be in the lead.
Oh.
But he has 6 pride bucks. I have 5.
Oh.
So that's why he would no longer be in the lead. He'd be tied with me. And Travis and Gurky are tied in 3rd place with 3.
Yeah, so we both got none last round.
That's right. Paul's just going to keep guessing me. We'll see if he continues it this round.
I'm not liking my chance. I feel like this is a recurring theme, but I have progressively liked my guesses less and less as these years have gone on. I'll leave with my strongest guess is Gurky. I'm going to say The Notebook, continuing the Nicholas Sparks connection. Probably my second most confident. Travis, I really feel bad about this, but I don't know how
that's your second most confident. Wow. Went downhill deep.
It did. It really did. I'm going to say Spider-Man 2, even though I know you're already on record as saying you like the first one better. And I that kind of surprised me, but I don't know what else to go with. And then the real shot in the dark here, and I'm hoping that I just happen to connect. Andrew, I'm going to say The Incredibles.
Okay.
Paul.
Yeah.
You quote this movie a lot.
I do. I don't know what you're talking about, but I can confidently say...
He quotes a lot of movies.
If it's a movie I've seen, I probably quote it a lot.
Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
We've already gone too far.
Yeah, fuck it.
I know. You say that you so go. Much. We've already gone too far.
Fuck it.
It's like your answer to everything. I'm like, can we do... No, we've already gone too far. Can I do... No, we've already gone too far. Please? Yeah. No. So, Travis... I went back and forth. I actually...
Nobody likes that.
Nobody likes me.
Also, I'm like, Paul, I haven't guessed all of yours right. I haven't gotten any of yours right.
Paul knows me.
No, you know one of mine.
Any of his, I meant.
Sorry,
I haven't got any of his
you,
right.
Andrew.
No. I care about Andrew's, too. So, we did see a movie together this year. And I almost put that one. But I'm going to also go with Spider-Man 2. I'm pretty sure we saw a movie together this year.
Travis is really confused.
I'm looking at
the
list.
He's like, what? What did we see? Andrew, for you, I'm putting, and as I said before we started, Paul already told me I'm wrong.
I did not say you're wrong.
You did too.
Okay, fine.
I said The Passion of the Christ.
Okay.
That was my joke when Paul was saying something about God and Andrew, and I said, one of the movies might have God involved.
Yeah. I heard that.
It was almost one of my guesses, so... If you listen to last episode, you know I mistakenly announced my choices for this year last year, but I'm yet again changing my choice for Paul away from Troy based on everyone else's reaction to that choice. So I'm just throwing a total dart on this one based on his self-professed love for it previously is The Grudge. I don't think it's actually going to be favored or influential, but Andrew, like I said last time, he's either loves this or hates this. iRobot, I'm sticking with it. And I'll turn the tables and Gherky will say Spider-Man 2.
There's a lot of Spider-Man 2 happening. Okay, so my picks, let me pull them up real quick here. For Paul, I'm guessing Anchorman. Another quotable movie.
Scotch. I'm not even upset, I'm just depressed.
Down in my belly.
For Travis, this is the one I picked.
Fuck you, San Diego.
We're definitely getting the explicit tag on this one.
Let's just go for it.
It's in. Let's go. Yeah. That also sounds
there's
like
a party. Paul, there's a party.
Pants party?
So clearly that's a very quotable movie. For Travis, I had some difficulty where I had a pick and then I changed it and I'm debating changing it back now. But I'm going to stick with the initial change and say Travis is getting Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. And for Gherky, I'm going to go with Mean Girls. See how crazy topic I went, but
that was my third guess for Gherky was Mean Girls.
That brings us to the actuals. Paul, tell us your favorite movie of 2004.
So I can't believe that I actually forgot to put a quote down for this one. I don't know why.
It's not The Grudge.
Right?
There's not. I burped like that once, and my wife looked at me and said, never do that again.
So I'm desperately trying to look for one right now, but whatever. I'm just going to say...
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a dodgeball.
We've already gone too far, and it's Harold and Kumar.
She already said the quote.
Yeah, I know.
He already said the quote. You messed up your quote.
I know. I'm a disappointment to everyone.
No. Gherky gets a point.
So
this is one of the few times you got it right.
Yeah, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. It is... hilarious. It still holds up after all this time. It is a great just total off the wall Neil Patrick Harris being like coked up going against type and having some sharp and insightful racial commentary
talking about diverse movies before this.
Thank you, come again, you know, with those like extreme sports guys and everything, and it's just a really funny movie, and I love it, and it's quotable, and I do quote it all the time, and I'm not ashamed of that. And I'll have words with anybody who tells me that it's not a great movie. The only thing wrong with
it
is that White Castle, surprisingly disappointing. Like, I had never had White Castle before seeing this movie, and after seeing it, I'm
before
like,
well, Andrew's bachelor party, there was
now I gotta have White Castle. And then I went to White Castle, and I'm like, this isn't really all that great. I don't know why they were
when you
so
want White Castle, though, nothing else will really do.
That's true, yeah. I probably should have just gone to like the Hot Dog Harry's or whatever the place that they went to with that guy. But anyway, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Needs no defense. Greatest movie of this year.
So.
Next.
I strongly disagree with you.
No.
Wrong.
Mine, no one guessed.
Oh, crap.
Is it
The Passion of the Christ?
Totally love that movie. Actually, I never saw that movie.
Saw. It must be Saw.
Must be. I picked as my favorite, and I had trouble this year because there's two that I really wanted to pick. I picked Harry Potter, Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah.
I love...
Every year, I considered a Harry Potter movie, and I thought
this was a good... This was a very good one.
Sirius Black comes in as the bad boy. Yes. Yeah, okay.
Sirius is awesome. The Dementors are cool. Mm-hmm. Like,
and not scary, apparently.
Not as scary as the Basilisk.
Yeah.
See, certain things are... too scary, and certain things are the right amount of scary.
Yeah, some kind of evil demon sucking out your soul and taking all the joy from you. Not scary, but it's hissing in the walls. That's scary.
It is.
Yeah, no, it's all about the presence.
Yeah. And as I know now, you don't like white noise through the radio.
I really.
That's a deep cut that no one else is going to get. But
someone will get it. Some of our listeners will get it.
Maybe. So that's your defense. Dementors, great.
Why do my movies need defenses?
I don't know.
Unless someone disagrees. I mean, it's Gary a Oldman, very good
Black.
Movie.
What else do you want?
It was amazing. It was one of the best books, and it was a very well done movie. And
new director. This was Christopher Columbus.
No, Christopher Columbus did the first two,
and then it was the
and this
over.
Is oh gosh, I'm drawing a blank as to who it is, but it's not Christopher Columbus.
But whoever it was, they changed tone remarkably.
Yeah.
And the opening sequence of this movie, when they're doing the Shakespeare quote...
Alfonso Cuarón.
Shakespeare quote chant in the Great Hall. That was pretty cool. I liked that scene a lot.
Which one?
The Shakespeare quote...
chant.
I don't remember that.
It's the song that they're singing in the Great Hall in the entrance way, in the entrance of the movie.
One thing that Paul knows about me that you guys might not is, I don't know, jack about, like, about directors, about actors. Honestly, if I can remember an actor who's in a movie, that's pretty rare. Some of these series, it's easy when you've got, like,
same actor
eight
over and
movies.
Over again.
Right. Yeah, so, but a lot of them, I'm like, I have no idea who you guys are talking about.
I think Tom Cruise did a really good job as Flitwick in this movie.
Shut up.
You know?
But then,
the short dwarf
but
character.
There's, like, I will reread books and rewatch movies a million times because I don't remember them. Like, I can watch it. I can have seen a movie like 10 times and I'll still be like, wait, what happens?
It's a superpower I wish I had.
You should watch Memento.
So I know
Memento.
That we one's supposed to...
about Memento.
Yeah, I've heard things about that, but I don't remember what.
We'll talk about it next year.
Yeah, so...
Oh, okay.
So, I have a hard time defending the movies because I don't really remember all of it.
Well, let me ask you this, because one thing that bothered me, something that bothers me about all movies generally is, there's two things. One is when they like bring people back to life because it kind of lessens the impact of the death. Sure. And another one, and it's closely related, is time travel. Because usually...
Me too, man!
Endgame.
Usually, time travel kind of
back
ruins...
Back to the Future!
...the movie. It doesn't... It's the whole point of Back to the Future. But especially when you have a series, time travel tends to ruin it. And you have in Prisoner of Azkaban, Hermione Granger has
right.
the time turner.
And why don't they use it at other
every
ones
single
watch?
Movie after that, I'm sitting here thinking, why don't you use a time right. turner? Why don't you use time turner?
To give it back, right?
Okay.
I assume.
Why doesn't anyone use the time turner? Like, you're willing to break the rules and turn back time to save a hippogriff, but
too
not
many
to save
risks when you play
Cedric
with time.
Diggory or Dumbledore or
this
anybody
is why
else
you have
who dies
a problem
later
with the
on.
Holdo maneuver, too.
That's a whole different issue. Like, that's not time travel, but it's the same concept.
But you're stuck by like you introduce a new power, and then no one ever uses it.
You introduce this game breaking power that you use for some sort of dumb reason, and the whole maneuver is not a dumb reason. But you wonder why it wasn't used all the time, and it's something that really bothered me.
You're also talking about Harry Potter, where everyone casts freaking magic.
Yeah,
they should be doing like all sorts of crazy stuff all the time.
Yeah,
there's rules.
It's one of the reasons.
Even in the magical universe.
Yeah, like the unforgivable curses that are used every single book.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. It's one of the reasons why I enjoy the Harry Potter movies. It'll never be like one of my top favorites.
Oh, let me change some of these.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
So is it my turn?
Yeah.
Go for it.
All right, yeah. Did Doogie Howser just steal my fucking car?
Oh, yeah. That would be cool. I didn't get the point, but whatever. You're, at least you're right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Say, my change helps me out. So the one I changed it from was Shaun really of the Dead, which is
good.
Sorry, but for like, you mentioned it last time. I don't think we've done that in that circumstance. And it's just, I don't see it. And so Harold and Kumar wasn't my worthy, so I pushed it up.
Yeah. No, I don't like Shaun of the Dead.
Really?
Which is like zombie movies.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then like...
What's your take on Hot Fuzz?
I don't... I probably did see it, but yeah. I don't know. I'm not a Simon Pegg fan, I guess.
Mm. Not a fan of pegging. Gotcha.
But yeah, then like it does... I don't know if Paul brought it up, but like it does have heart near the end where like they finally get there. And he's like, I want, oh no, maybe this is at the beginning? I don't know. But he says like, I want that feeling, the feeling that comes over a man when he gets exactly what he desires.
No, it's earlier on because they're seeing,
that's why they decide to go to
Castle. Stern and like.
But he's also, he's also talking about getting the girl, which then.
Yeah.
Like.
Sure got a lot of baggage.
But yes, the fuck it, we've gone too far.
Yeah, I mean, like, for as hilarious and completely over the top that movie is, there are moments of, like, surprising relatability, you know? Like, you have John Cho as, he's, like, the guy who's always been dumped on because everyone thinks he's, like, the Asian that just wants to work all the time.
And Cal Penn's the weight of parental expectations.
Yeah, everyone expects him to be a doctor, and he can be a great doctor, but he just doesn't want to do the stereotypical thing, and it's a surprisingly, I mean, it's a interesting... Yeah, commentary on race and expectations of growing up and everything like that. At the same time, you have a guy named Freak Show, whose wife is trying to like have a threesome with him, and Malin Ackerman from.
See, I don't remember any of this part.
Yeah. Well,
and so you
this is yet another movie that he made me watch when we started dating.
That's surprising because that is a highly inappropriate movie to have you watch while we were dating.
You had me watch this.
Okay, well,
I wouldn't have seen.
It's amazing that I managed to put a ring on it. Then. That's some bad judgment on my part.
But yeah, I agree with you. It feels like there's a lot more quotes, but I'm actually scrolling through quotes. I'm like, no. The one quote that I always say is, "We've gone too far."
No, I mean, it's not. There's not a lot of quotes that are like self-contained. Just one like single statement, like you know. Why is rum gone or something like that? It's in context. There's like dialogue that goes back and forth.
Yeah, like I'm reading it on the page. None of these are really funny, but I know if they were on the screen being read by these characters, I would be laughing again.
Yeah, it's not necessarily as quotable as an Anchorman or a Dodgeball. Not to give anything away, but
so are you ready for my favorite movie of 2004?
How wrong were we all?
Gerky is right.
Yes.
The Passion of the Christ.
You're telling me I was wrong.
This was a ridiculously hard choice because it is really hard to call this my favorite movie of the year.
See?
But it is the best movie of the year.
That's not the best. It's your favorite.
What's the other movie then? You said there were two.
There's another one I will give you credit for if you managed to pull it out. No, none of you did.
Butterfly Effect?
No.
Not Troy?
No.
Those are my other two I have written down for you.
Catwoman.
God, no. So the Passion of the Christ, I'll mention it in my worthy of discourse because it's not my influential.
Okay.
We'll talk about it then.
So many possibilities.
But the Passion of the Christ is a remarkably powerful adaptation and interpretation of the Passion sequences. And it's directed by Mel Gibson. People know this, so that brings a level of problematicness to him because he's been revealed to have had anti-Semitic commentary, especially after the fact. And the entirety of the Passion has been viewed by some as having anti-Semitic tones, especially for certain Christian groups. So it's a complicated movie to start with, but then you get to just the sheer level of violence in this movie.
Yeah.
He does not pull any punches in showing the bloody nature of the crucifixion process.
Shockingly, the crucifixion is a bloody process.
Shockingly, the whole movie is bloody. It is tough to watch. And it is so tough to watch. I make an effort to watch it every March or April in the Passion time to make sure that I'm reminded of the whole point of it. Because it's visceral. You know, you hear the story, you read the story, you're like, okay, yeah, this is what's going on. This is what happened. This is why it happened. The movie puts it into human terms in a way that words on a page don't. And Mel Gibson did a great job with that.
Yeah, I almost chose it for you, but I was like,
felt too on the nose.
Yeah, it's really,
for
really
it to
tough.
Be your favorite.
That's kind of my thinking too. And the reason why, I wasn't that trying to discourage you from saying it, but you asked for my honest opinion. I'm like, I think this is a movie that Andrew will say is very powerful and important, but I don't know if he'll pick it as his favorite.
I also
it's
certainly
too on the nose.
I felt similar to iRobot. I was like, either he really, really loves this or he really, really hates it, I feel like.
That's the only movie from 2004 that I watched this often, so.
Yeah, and if that was the question, if the question was, which movie from 2004 has Andrew seen a dozen times plus, I probably would have picked Passion of the Christ then.
Oh, you knew he watched it a lot?
If I had to pick a movie that seemed like a movie that he would watch every year or something like that would be the movie I'd pick.
Okay.
For the reasons he explained. Yeah. Like,
just because I know he doesn't like any of the other movies this year, I would probably agree.
I mean, I'm looking at
Incredibles.
He said there was one
more.
He's
got kids.
There's one other movie
there's
that
the
is a
and,
ridiculously
you know.
Good movie that we'll talk about later on.
Is it remotely the same type of movie?
No.
Okay. I have some thoughts then. But we'll see if I'm right.
So we're on to
Influential.
Influential for me. All right, so Anchorman.
Yay!
Just because it is so quotable. Even to this day, you still hear, I'm not even disappointed. I'm just impressed. Scotchy, Scotch, Scotch. I mean, we had
that
all those quotes already.
Quickly.
That escalated quickly.
A full-on meme.
Yeah, and I mean, you see these funny Google trends where the phrase that escalated quickly, and there's memes and everything. There was a sequel, which isn't quite as good, but it's kind of a timeless movie. It's very quotable. It kind of kickstarted Will Ferrell's career because there was a lot of good careers that were enhanced in there. You know, you had Paul Rudd, you had Steve Carell, Kristen Applegate kind of ended her career, I guess, because she didn't do much afterwards. But she was great in it. I don't know why it seemed to end her career. And Will Ferrell,
it's kind of one of those like generational might be too strong word, but almost like one of those generational ensemble comedy movies where like every comedian from that time period is in it that you can really think of.
And it's hard for me to think of a more quotable, more memeable, still relevant movie from this time period. There's one other that I'll mention for the discourse later, but
I think
I think you did, yeah.
And I've talked about pirates before.
I came into this movie absolutely dead certain that I was going to hate it.
Yeah.
And I don't. It's really good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that really speaks to the breadth of the comedy, where Paul and I have a very different take on how comedy should go, I think, and we both agree this is a good comedy movie.
You also hated Elf, apparently, and then still saw this.
I didn't want to.
And I will say, Will Ferrell is very hit or miss for me. I wouldn't consider myself a Will Ferrell fan, necessarily. I think that he's often too much, but this was the right amount.
He hit his character perfectly on this movie.
So, yeah, that's my most influential.
Mine was Mean Girls.
Mm.
Wow!
I almost said Mean Girls, but I figured Nicholas Sparks' Notebook was better.
I didn't like the Notebook.
What?
Yeah. I'm one of the people who like Nicholas Sparks and didn't like the Notebook. I didn't like the book.
I got 3 points this year.
I didn't
that's
like...
never happened.
Yeah. So
by definition, it couldn't have happened last.
Yeah. And I mean, this one, it's got a Broadway show now. It's got, I know, like, my nieces all memorized the dance, the Jingle Bells dance, and it's definitely a very popular, very common thing.
I know it's got a huge reach as well for a movie like this. It's way outside of the normal scope
and
of a movie like this.
It's not really has memes, but it definitely feels like it's...
Quits are trying to make something happen.
Or is now. But like it feels like it's...
Pink.
I don't know.
What?
Quit trying to make things happen, yes, and Pink on Wednesday.
It just feels like it's...
That, I don't know, but...
Everybody kind of knows what Mean Girls
is. Everybody knows it. Lindsay Lohan did a good job in it. And
was
it
Tina Fey's first writing credit besides SNL maybe or something?
I didn't know she wrote it.
I thought she wrote it, but
What's her name? The head mean girl. I can't believe I'm drawing a blank here. From Wedding Crashers. Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, Rachel McAdams.
She was
McAdams.
The
was this her
girl, right?
It wasn't
I don't know if it was
movie,
her first
was
movie,
it?
But it's the no. I think it's probably her first major movie.
Yeah. I mean I really liked it. It was good. I did change to it after not having enough of a defense for my
What was your original one? The Notebook?
No.
I get a point.
No.
Mark it down.
Nope. Nope.
She said she didn't like
them. I think I'm going 0 for this year.
Okay. Yeah. I'll tell you later what my original one was, because it's going to be a worthy of discourse.
Okay. So I'm going to lead up to it first, that horror in 2000s?
What?
Okay, but first you had Dawn of the Dead, Amityville Horror, House of Wax, Black Christmas, Halloween, My Bloody Valentine, Friday the 13th, Wolfman, Crazies, Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Hills Have Eyes, all these remakes. Last House on the Left, I Stood on Your Grave apparently had a remake.
Those are all this year?
I think I know where you're going with
No, this. They weren't all this year. Oh. But that was like, that was what horror was looking like in this time frame. And then you had Saw.
Yeah.
Which, I almost changed mine to Saw for
I
you.
I almost picked it for you, yeah.
I can see that being very influential, sure.
Yeah, I mean, nine films with the... There's apparently a 3D. It went 1 through 6, then there was a 3D. Then there was a movie just called Jigsaw, and then Organ Donor, I guess, is coming out this year?
Yeah.
I don't know. In 2009, it became the most profitable horror film series of all time. Spawned the whole torture porn...
Yeah.
Hostel 1, Turistas, what? Devil's Rejects, Wolf Creek, Borderland, Captivity. Captivity, which Paul and I saw for Alicia Cuthbert.
Oh, Alicia Cuthbert, yeah. That's not a good movie.
It didn't invent the torture porn genre, actually, as what critics call label that. It's like some like Cannibal Holocaust, I think, was first.
It's okay, so for Gurkhi's, because she's squirming over here, it's not like, it's probably not what you think. It's the idea behind torture porn is that there's a video of people getting tortured purpose other than just have people being tortured on screen.
Whether or not there's a purpose is debatable. Like, that's one reason why I liked the first Saw movie.
Yeah.
And rapidly fell off from that franchise. And I didn't like the Hostel series.
I don't think there's any expectation that there's any sexual component of it. It's just a torture for the sake of torture.
Okay,
kind of,
so porn doesn't necessarily mean pornographic there.
Well, no. I think it's to reinforce the
gratuitousness
of it. Yeah, the gratuitousness of it.
Okay.
Like, just like porn is sex for sex, not for...
Yeah, there's no artistic value or anything. Like that. No narrative value.
That's what they've attested.
Torture porn is torture for... Huh? Well, that's the rationale behind it. I'm not necessarily espousing the view. I'm just trying to explain.
Okay.
Yeah, like...
Now, porn can have narrative.
But actually, in the first Saw, it wasn't Clint Mansell, I don't think, but it was very reminiscent of his type of work.
I don't know.
Pretty sure it wasn't him, but...
The soundtrack? Are you talking
for
about?
For Saw, yeah.
Okay.
That's the one that I was going to try to sing for Requiem for a Dream, that I can't remember if it's from Saw or Requiem for a Dream. You're not helping
me. Okay, sorry. No, I remember Saw having a very distinctive soundtrack that I liked.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Cary Elwes is in this first one, right? Wasn't he the doctor that was in there?
Maybe. I don't remember any of the actors' names in it.
From Princess Bride. As You Wish.
That's that. I actually, now you say his name and I'm remembering it, probably.
Charlie Clouser, who worked with Trent Reznor.
I knew there was a Trent Reznor connection.
Yeah, Saw was one of my worthy of discourse.
Yeah, it changed for better or worse. Like, it changed it. And this is definitely one of those ones that you had to see it in theaters. I mean, I saw Saw 2 multiple times at home, but seeing Saw 3, there's one where he has brain surgery.
Hmm.
Like, he kidnaps a doctor to specifically
cut open
and relieve pressure. Gurkhi's rubbing her eyes, but there were there were like some, you know, some sort of teenage girl screaming at this scene in the movie. And so I remember some guy going, "It's just brain surgery." Either watched a lot of Discovery Channel or was a pre-med guy himself or something, but he's like, "This isn't a horror movie, girl. This is just surgery."
Don't watch Pie.
No, I won't. I don't do well in scary.
It's not scary, but...
The only knock against Saw is that I did, because of my whole overriding trend of like franchises and whatnot, I checked to see how, not profitable, but how much money the box office Saw made. Not very impressive. And it's probably because it's a rated R horror movie. Those are always going to be less grossing. But I mean, even this first one, which you would expect to be one of the highest grossing, didn't make the top 10 highest grossing of this year. So that was the one knock against it for me. I agree with you.
I would guess Saw 2 or maybe 3 probably made the most out of
it,
I bet you.
It may have, but it's definitely trailed off in recent years, and it was never hugely.
I didn't even know they made a 3D, or I think I vaguely remember hearing Jigsaw, but since they didn't call it Saw Jigsaw, I didn't even know Jigsaw necessarily was related to the franchise. But so, Andrew.
So, we're on to my influential pick, huh? So, for 2004 influential, I have Super Size Me.
I put that under Worthy of a Discourse.
It is a documentary on the effects of certain types of marketing, but also the effects of fast food. And the premise is that the guy is going to eat McDonald's food every meal, every day for a month and see what that does to his health. And spoiler alert, it's not good.
Really?
Guess what? Fast food is bad for you. Even though there are people who he interviews in the documentary who do eat a lot of fast food and it doesn't hurt them. On average, it's really bad for you. And it what is really influential for is re-sparking documentaries as social commentary and political things, re-sparking documentaries as popular movies. Michael Moore had done a couple of these, but this one pushed it to the next level, I think. And then also because there was a phenomenal response to this by McDonald's specifically. They were being targeted quite heavily in this, and they changed their recipes around. They started offering salads and healthier options. They stopped doing the "Would you like to supersize that?" specifically because of this movie. So this documentary had real world impacts.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, one of his things is that if he was asked if he wanted to supersize it, he would always say yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they kept asking.
He wouldn't necessarily order it that way, but if they asked, he would say yes.
And he ate the entire thing every time.
And there were, certainly criticisms or pushbacks, at least. I think he had gone from having home-cooked vegan meals every day from his wife to jumping into eating every day at McDonald's, always getting the supersize when offered, eating all of his food. And it's one of those, well, yeah, of course, when you go from almost as healthy as possible to almost as unhealthy as possible to ridiculous degrees that pretty much no one else does, there's going to be problems. But that doesn't take away from the fact that there is something there. And it
I don't think even McDonald's expect you to eat their food three times
a day. Yeah, and I think that was their comeback. It's like, yeah, no, we don't expect anyone to come here and get three supersized meals a day, every day, because that's just ridiculous. But
because that's what I just said last time we met, and I ate like some ridiculous meal at Burger King. I'm like, you know what? I don't mind, because I eat it like once a year. Yeah. I'm not eating this every day.
Yeah, or even if you ate it like once a day, like that's not quite as bad as eating it three times a day. That's triply as bad, and it's hard to imagine anyone doing it three times a day.
It's pretty rough. And it was not, he suffered pretty profound medical consequences, actually. Mm-hmm. And his doctor urged him in the middle of the filming to stop doing this because it was affecting him so badly. But he kept at it and did it for the rest of the documentary. Mm-hmm. He's gone on to do other documentaries. No one has had as much success as this one or as influential. But this one definitely turned things on its head a little bit in 2004.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. Any worthy of discourses now? Do you want to start, Andrew, and tell us your close second?
Sure. So the movie that almost made my best favorite picture of 2004.
Team America World Police?
No. Okay. That one's worthy of discussion, but not on my list. That was a funny, awful movie.
Not sure if you like it or not, based on that.
It's tough. It's tough. I'm not entirely sure if I like it or not.
Okay.
The one that I do like a lot is The Aviator.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's close enough to Passion of the Christ.
Sure.
I mean, it's closer than Team America World Police is.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
That's what I was asking.
I'm passing the Leo torch to Andrew now. After Catch Me If You Can and now Aviator.
This was the movie with Catch Me If You Can that turned Leo into a star for me. And that continues on through into the next decade when we get into
Romeo and Juliet.
One of my favorite movies, which we're not going to get to because it's not in this decade. But Leo in this role is astounding. Martin Scorsese does a great job directing. It's a period piece. It's a biopic. It flows so well. It's got great set pieces. It's just a good movie. And it has a tie into themes that I find very powerful. So as I'm watching it in the theater, it's just super impactful for me.
What are the themes? Obsessive compulsive disorder?
Yeah, mental health issues that I'm blanking on the guy's name.
Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Where Howard Hughes is the main character of the biopic, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, and he has this obsessive compulsive disorder, which allows him to be great, but also completely cripples him in the later parts of his career. And as he's building his great culmination, the Spruce Goose, is this actually the culmination, or is this his madness taking over and pushing him to do something that's really not a good idea? And no one knows, because that's how he's always done it.
Anytime I think about the Spruce Goose, I just think of Montgomery Burns.
Yeah, I mean, that's Howard Hughes is one of those characters.
There was an episode where they specifically were mocking Howard Hughes, and mm-hmm. he's walking around in tissue boxes and tell Smithers, get in the plane. Like, that's a model, sir. Get in the plane.
Which is one of the reasons why I think this biopic is actually still important and not just something that I like. We're getting to the point where history from even 100 years ago is being forgotten. People that are not Hitler are forgotten, because as important as Howard Hughes was in the time, he's not relevant now. And without something like this movie to remind us of him, a reference like that in The Simpsons gets lost. And people say, well, that's kind of crazy that he's doing that. But it's really funny. So good writing on the team when it's actually just this, you know, interpretation of the facts that have actually happened in someone's life. Obviously, there's no evidence that Howard Hughes pulled out a gun on somebody in this. But, you know, he's the Montgomery Burns is being turned into a caricature of Howard Hughes's later stage of life.
And just for... I don't know if we'll do the next decade after this, but can I take a shot and say Inception's your favorite movie of Leo's in the next decade?
It's Inception.
Yeah, Travis, any worthy of
this? Oh, course? Any other?
I have others, but I'll let someone take another shot first.
Yeah, I definitely. Well, I'll let Paul mention one of them that I already had written down. Yeah, I would say The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. So I know you had guessed it for somebody, but yeah,
like, Andrew. Yeah,
I mean, there are some people that say it's the best superhero movie. Full stop. I don't go that far.
Monsters Incorporated, Finding Nemo, The Incredibles.
It's a great run for Pixar.
I'm not done yet. We'll talk again next year.
Oh,
change my guess.
See, I had a lot of, while I was going throughout here, I often picked a lot of Pixar movies for you, and I couldn't really figure out why, because I wasn't sure you'd like any of the Pixar movies, but I kept on finding myself being drawn to them.
It also beat your Shrek 2 for best animated feature film.
My Shrek 2. I didn't pick Shrek 2 at all this year. I said Shrek was influential.
Yeah.
Because it led to Shrek 2.
I don't know if it's next year. We'll talk again over the next few years. Yeah. How's that?
And then two somewhat minor movies, but the beginning of the remake of Dawn of the Dead with the Johnny Cash song is fantastic. And like,
is that with the car accident sequence?
Well, yeah, no, but like with the little girl and then the running out in the street and getting hit by the ambulance and into the man comes around, like, that's stupendous. Like, that's probably Zack Snyder's best film making sequence, in my opinion. Is that
I couldn't sleep for a couple days after seeing that movie, because every time I would open my eyes and look at the doorway to my bedroom, I envisioned that little girl standing there and being just terrified.
I began my talking about Saul by tearing down all these remakes. This was a remake that, to me, improved on the original. Like, I've seen the original. I understand the message about consumerism and all that George Romero was doing. It is boring.
Yeah,
to watch an empty mall full of shuffling zombies and these people hiding from them. Like, it's not nearly as entertaining as this one is.
It's a very, very different movie.
It's a totally different movie. Probably doesn't hit the messages as strong as the original did.
But Dawn of the Dead is an action movie that is engaging and entertaining, whereas the other one is, you know, social commentary and an indie film, really.
Right. And then the other one I would mention is, forget whatever's on Netflix and Dolph Lundgren and everything. This is Tom Jan. This is The Punisher. Mm-hmm. This version of The Punisher, and it uses one of the best arcs in the comic book as its basis, the Garthianus Welcome Home Frank arc.
Remind me who the director is on this one.
The director of it, I don't know the
director. 2004 Punisher director, let me look that up.
But yeah, it almost could have made it. What if Harold and Kumar hadn't been in there, this probably would have been my favorite movie of the year. It would have been Punisher.
So I don't know which one you're hoping that I say. I got four. Do you want me to get...
Go for it.
All right. So, Saw was one of them. You've already spoken to that. Another one was Team America World Police.
That's the movie we saw together. I'm pretty sure you saw it with us at Cinema Deluxe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm constantly impressed by just how clever Matt Stone and Trey Parker are. I've seen Book of Mormon... Team America World Police. I don't actually watch South Park all that much, But every time I've seen any of their bigger things, like South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut, Team America, World Police, it's just, sure, there's a lot of gross out humor, a lot of swearing, a lot of just, oh, great, it's puppets having sex. That's weird. But there's also, like, the speech about, like, the, like, we're really going to earn the explicit tag here, but the dicks and the assholes and the pussies, you know, about how, like, they all kind of need each other and they all kind of live in a sense of symbiote. Nobody else is backing me up here. No. But I think it's a really clever analogy about how they all exist in this world and they all have flaws, but they all kind of need each other to kind of work in
this. I was just trying to think of, I know we've had previous examples of where you use the vulgarity and stuff as the shock to grab somebody's attention, and then you sneak the message in.
It's all about how, like, yes, like the U.S. military is a blunt object that goes around killing a lot of people, but there are also some bad people out there that need to be killed. And yes, people like Michael Moore and Al Gore are annoying because they're always nagging and stuff like that, but they need to be a check on the military. And they all kind of work in a symbiosis, and that was kind of the message. And it's, of course, delivered in typical South Park crude fashion about, like, again, the...
While also still being funny. I mean, they approach fighting relevant satire with humor of a really absurd type, sometimes too much, but oftentimes right on point with some stuff you're like, you can't say that, but that's funny.
Yeah.
Kind of mentality.
And it makes you think. And
I just say I hated this movie. I hated it. I abhorred it. I don't like South Park. Yeah. I did like Book of Mormon, but I'm like...
Which is eternally going to be confusing to me. I don't know how you liked Book of Mormon, but...
It was fun.
And so is Team America World Police.
No.
I can completely understand not liking this movie in particular. There are probably parts of South Park that you would find funny, but you have to, like, dig for it sometimes. So it's not worth the effort. But yeah, Team America World Police is, again, influential. It has a lot of legs where people are still thinking about those ideas. And they show up in debates periodically still.
I'm surprised it's not more influential, honestly. Like, I feel like it's kind of been forgotten, but I think it's one of their better... pieces of work.
You're surprised there's not more movies made with puppets.
Well, I just dolls. Considering how popular South Park has been, it seems to have been forgotten a little bit. Another one is Dodgeball.
Okay, and the pirate
that is very close second to Anchorman in terms of just it's such a super quotable, super funny. I absolutely love one of my favorite scenes in like any movie ever, and it's totally bizarre. Is when I don't even remember his name. The guy whose wife is getting hit on in the stands by somebody else, and he just goes super crazy and like completely wipes out the opposing like German team or something like that. It's just some moments like that.
Isn't this the one? This the one that has Chuck Norris giving the thumbs up?
Yeah, it's got Chuck Norris. It's got David Hasselhoff is the coach of the
Ocho.
Yeah, ESPN the Ocho. Yeah, just so much greatness in there.
I read about it in a book.
Yeah, you just go on and on quoting it. So. Dodgeball, great movie of discourse. And the last one is Van Helsing. I know it's probably not a great movie.
It's so bad.
It's super corny. You know what? I kind of enjoyed it. Yeah, it's Hugh Jackman, Kate Beckinsale. What more do you need?
It is a really bad movie that is kind of fun to watch.
Yeah. It's kind of like The Mummy, but with vampires. And Kate Beckinsale solidifies her role.
At least
role
The Mummy is more entertaining.
As like the, you know, femme fatale trying to kill vampires. And it's a further argument for Hugh Jackman as one of the actors of the decade and Kate Beckinsale as one of the actresses of the decade.
I don't think this one helps Hugh Jackman any, but...
I think it does, but I understand if you don't think...
I will say he still got it, even though he has this miss on this. But I will say that the movie is entertaining at times, has some point. It didn't put me to sleep like another movie that I'm thinking of that was a little bit later on did, which was so similar.
For Travis, X2 putting him to sleep is a good thing, right? Because it's also got Faramir, David Wenham, I think, in it. So
I'm a little surprised you didn't mention National Treasure.
National Treasure is good.
You watched that one a lot more than most of those.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it because you made me watch it?
No.
I don't think...
It's one of the ones that you just... It's kind of like an absent-minded, like, to rewatch.
It's Nick Cage. I can't disagree with that. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure you have it, too. But
I've watched Dodgeball a lot.
The one that I was going to say for Worthy of Discourse is the one that I almost picked as my favorite, and it's Million Dollar Baby. One of the few times the Academy and I agree. I loved this movie. Hilary Swank did a great job. It was a female boxer, and it was just great.
Once he read out Million Dollar Baby as the winner, I was like, oh, that's what I should have chosen instead of Mean Girls. I'm glad I kept Mean Girls, because at the end of the point, but I'm not at all surprised.
It is what I had as most influential until I was like, fine, if I have to be able to defend it, then I guess Mean Girls, even though it won Best Picture, so I guess I could have used that as the defense in and of itself.
Interesting that you think that winning Best Picture wasn't a good enough argument for
defending. I didn't think about that. I mean, honestly, I didn't really realize it was had won Best Picture until he said that, and we had already started recording, and I switched before we started recording, because...
Man, you're really trying to game the system here, aren't you?
How am I gaming it? I switched it beforehand because you gave me crap for picking How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Sure, it's all my fault.
It is.
Okay.
And it didn't matter. It gave him a point, but it didn't.
I know. I don't want it giving him a point.
Well, don't give me crap then.
I'm trying to get pride.
Give me a hard time, then I won't switch my things around.
I got one more for us to talk about on the worthy of discussion list.
Right, then I have some actors to toss out.
Napoleon Dynamite.
I thought you might mention that one too.
Haven't seen it.
You haven't?
Yeah. Again,
I know you're supposed to vote for Pedro.
Yeah, that's all I know. This is a super oddball comedy, which has incredible legs, has a huge cult following, is very mimetic, has a lot of quotable lines, but is probably not something that most people are going to like. But it's definitely an interesting movie from this year and worth talking about and knowing that it exists. Mm-hmm.
And now we've talked about it.
And that's it. We're done.
And people know it exists.
I mean, people really liked that movie. Yeah, I wasn't one of them who really liked it.
Neither am I.
Yeah. I don't know that I've seen the whole thing.
I think it's entertaining, but it's not something I'd go. It reminds me of a better Rushmore.
If you didn't remember. See that.
Yeah. I don't like Rushmore, but okay. I did kind of like Napoleon Dynamite.
So, toss out a few actors. This was a double whammy for Matt Damon, because he had a Bourne sequel and an Ocean's sequel in the same year. Yeah.
Ocean's 11?
And Ocean's 12. And Ocean's 13. In all three Bourne movies. Yeah, he had quite the decade.
And then he got out of Bourne movies, and someone else came in, and that was weird.
Jeremy Renner was in one, I think.
I think you're right, yeah.
So, that also means George Clooney had Ocean's 12, but what else? Denzel... This is his, I think it's his award-winning year, possibly, besides Training Day won him the award, but he had Man on Fire and Manchurian Candidate this year.
I watched Manchurian Candidate because I thought it'd be good.
That was a remake, too.
It was a remake, so I watched them both. I watched the original and then I watched the remake, and they were both pretty bad. The original was better, though.
I had already mentioned all of Will Ferrell's movies, so I won't repeat any of them. This was a... I thought of Keira Knightley because she's on the poster for King Arthur, but she's actually not really highly billed, and Clive Owen obviously is the high because he's actually Arthur.
Yeah,
but she's pretty far down the list for being front and center on the poster.
Huh.
But I do remember seeing that movie specifically.
Theme here. We saw Captive because of Alicia Cuthbert. So this one because of Keira Knightley, and Beckham was Keira Knightley.
To be fair, we were in our early 20s at this point. So and I noted that Nicole Kidman had a above average year for her. Oh, she had Stepford Wives this year.
That was a good movie. That was one where I liked the remake better.
But say that was another remake where it was probably better than the original.
And again, this was my Netflix period, so I was like, oh, hey, you have both of those. I'll get that one from the past and this one from current and watch them back to back. And that was not maybe the best choice, but it was interesting.
And then just, I already mentioned during the awards, but yeah, I never really saw it and I didn't appreciate Wine at this point, but Sideways from all I know of, really... made a lot more people start drinking wine.
Yeah.
You watch any TV show now and every mom has a glass of wine in her hand at this point. Would that have happened maybe without this movie? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I can't imagine that many people saw Sideways, considering it wasn't one of the top Christian movies, but...
I managed to see it, and I don't usually see that many indie movies.
All right, any other worthy discourse, any other actors or actresses of the decade? Or the year, sorry. Or the decade. No?
No.
Okay. Well, Discord channel. discord.io/rampantdiscourse. Twitter @rampantdisc. Facebook, Rampant Discourse. Give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. Check us out at rampantdiscourse.com. Am I missing anything?
Keep talking to us.
Can't stop the discourse.